It must be Thursday. Welcome to Learning Unwrapped, the talk show about your most important life skill. Brought to you here by IBM TV, International Broadcast Media Television. So thanks, shout out to the executive producers, Ankit, Nick, Kim. I appreciate you hosting this show. We have a great time every week. Well, at least I have a great time every week. But I hear the audience does too. So hello to the live audience. Please join us today, posting your comments, your questions. We've got a great lineup to talk about unlocking leadership at all levels. So let me first introduce my co-host, who's a fabulous person that I have been working with for, a number of years. I can't remember. But my co-host came to work here as a consultant at IDE Corp. And she is now also a coordinator working with newer consultants who come on board to also help them as they learn all the skills of leadership. So please welcome Christina Bowinkle.
Hi, Nancy.
Christina. Christina, what is your title?
Coordinator of New Consultant Support.
I love that. Okay. And you support the new consultants?
I do.
Well, thank God somebody has to. Shout out to our consultants.
Shout out. They are amazing.
They are amazing. And what's fun about, to me, the consulting world is, you know, we go out and we hire the best of the best in the teaching world, but consulting is different. And so you're in a leadership position to go out and help lead people to new innovative heights. So that makes it. Now, what's something you learned this week?
Kind of a random fact. So I love words and language. And I saw this article this week that said that Germans created 1,200 new words since the pandemic. All pandemic related, of course.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting. And if you know anything about German words, they use a lot of compound words. So they're really long. So
wow.
I enjoyed reading that. It was fun.
Do you know any of them?
I could not pronounce it.
Wow, that's really interesting. You know, you wonder what everyone's doing in a pandemic. I never thought about creating new words.
Right.
We've got some. Oh, let me turn my phone off. We've got some really cool guests with us tonight. So let's get them in and start this conversation on unlocking leadership at all levels. Our first guest is a lifetime member of the Girl Scouts. She has received all of Scouting's highest awards, including the Gold Award, which is only presented to 6% of all of the Girl Scouts each year. And the Gold Award is equivalent to like the Eagle Scouts Award for Boy Scouts. She has participated in Camp CEO and shadowed the CEO of the Girl Scouts of West Central Florida. She's given back to her Girl Scout community by volunteering at events for younger girls over the past 6 years. And she is currently working toward a degree in political science. She wants to be either an attorney or a politician, maybe both, at Hillsborough Community College. Please welcome Jen Allen.
Hi.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Jen.
How are you?
Good, good.
Good. So glad you could join us today. Can you tell us something that you've learned this week?
So something new I learned this week, which I thought was very, it's not interesting, I guess. It's more weird. But so there's different types of upper class people. There's the upper class, and then there's just the upper lower class. And I just thought that was super interesting because you only see that there's only really one upper class, but there's actually like three.
There's layers. And is it all based on, is it based on income or is it a combination?
You could say it's based on income, but it's also based on, did you inherit the money from your parents or did you build it yourself? Were you an entrepreneur and did you make the money yourself?
Oh, so if two people, let's say, have a net worth of $10 billion, but one inherited it and one earned it, who gets the higher level?
So the one who inherits it, the one that was born into that upper class, would be the one who would be the upper class. The other one would be the upper lower class.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I know.
And Jen, just tell us also, you were telling me backstage that the girl in Girl Scouts, actually each letter stands for something, and I didn't know that.
Yes, so it will be the GRL, which girl, the G would stand for go-getter, the I would stand for innovator, R would be risk taker, and L would be leader.
I love that. Well, it's great to have you here. Let's bring in our next guest to join you. My next guest is the Director of K-12 Computer Science and Technology Education for the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. She is also the CEO and founder of a company called Limitless Leader, which we will hear more about, providing leadership coaching. And she is the author of a book, The 1 Minute Meeting. Additionally, in her spare time, she's an adjunct at the School of Government, teaching leadership at the UNC Chapel Hill. Please welcome Dr. Mary Hemphill Joseph.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Good. Welcome, Mary.
Hi.
Can you tell us what you learned this week?
Absolutely. So I absolutely love listening to TED Talks in my spare time, like while I'm getting ready in the morning or while I'm driving and doing errands. And I listened to an amazing TED Talk that said we are actually only 4 years away from the digital information and the digital age consuming all of the written and physical information in our country. So as we think about just like Wikipedia, or we think about the World Wide Web, we are literally creating more information over the next 4 years than is housed in the Library of Congress. And I thought that was super cool to think about.
Wow.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty cool.
Absolutely. And,
you know, just following in Jen's footsteps, I know that you have a company called the Limitless Lady. What does Limitless stand for? L.
I was like, oh, how can I come up with something? But truly, it is about taking the limits off of what society believes you can do, can think, or can create. And I think we're all living in a time where we're looking to take that limit away and to really sort of innovate our spaces, our careers, our organizations.
That's awesome. So I look forward to hearing more about that.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's bring in our last guest I've known for, I think, over 20 years now. We first collaborated when he was in Westwood, New Jersey. There's a story to come there. He was named the 2012 New Jersey Superintendent of the Year. And I've worked with him in a couple of places, had the pleasure of consulting with him in a few places and designing some very cool classrooms. Currently, we are working with him. My co-host is the consultant, one of the consultants working on the account, as he is the superintendent of the Bronxville School District in New York. And he's also an adjunct professor in educational leadership at Ramapo College. Please welcome Dr. Roy Montesano.
Thank you, Nancy. Hi, everybody. Hi, it's so nice to be with you. And Christina, I'm ready for your question. Go ahead.
Can you tell us something that you've learned this week, Roy?
You see the trend, right?
Yeah, I caught it. I caught that a little bit, but so thanks. This is not the one I really was going to talk about, but just looking at the picture that Nancy put up there introducing me, I learned that you can never get rid of old pictures that are online somewhere because that's an old picture. So, what I want to talk about or mention was.
Send us your headshots because you never know what we'll do otherwise.
Yeah, no kidding. Good to know. What I was going to mention that I learned about was the really interesting, unique relationship between Bruce Springsteen and Barack Obama. And if you haven't had a chance to, there's a great podcast on Spotify by, it's called Renegades, where the two of them are just chatting with each other about their commonalities, about where they came from, about the trials and tribulations they had. And it was especially interesting during this time when we're all facing a lot of challenges as a country and a lot of divide in the country. And they really just kind of have a great conversation about it, coming from different places, but both feeling like outsiders at some point. It's a fascinating listen. So I wasn't aware that the two of them became such interesting friends and a nice relationship.
Right. That is definitely something to look up. Is that a video we can watch?
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
Yeah, they do have a trailer video on YouTube, so you can just see like a minute and a half trailer as well.
That's cool. Yeah. Wow, look at that. They're both leaders in their own right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's kick off this conversation. So we're talking about how do we unlock leadership skills in others at all levels, from the youngest to the oldest. So if you think about that, if you are looking to unlock the leadership skills in someone, what kind of qualities do you notice that attract you to that person as a potential leader, or what kind of qualities are you looking for that let you know that this person can become a great leader? Who wants to kick that off? Don't all be shy now.
So Nance, I'll kick it off if you don't mind. I'll be happy to jump in. So, you know, in my experience, I'll use my college teaching experience first, because I'm working with a number of teachers who are in a master's program looking to become future leaders. And, you know, it's interesting because I can probably pick out the ones that I think are going to make decent leaders just from a few classes. And you look for, at least for me anyway, those learners, people who want to continuously learn and get better at what they do and are going into it for the right reasons, meaning that it's not about a title, it's not about a position of power, it's about supporting and working with others to try to make things better. So I look for those who are learners, who know how to listen, because leading is about listening to others, and who can empathize with others. You know, I think a great strength is being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes and say, gee, how is that decision, or how is this going to hit that other person as I'm going through it? So those are some of the things I think I would put in right off the bat, just to say there are some interesting qualities about people. And the other thing I would mention is that recently we're learning about that people have this notion of leaders and leadership as this kind of larger than life figure. You know, you always have to be this big person or leave a gigantic footprint somewhere. And it's not about that. I think, you know, the recent work of Jim Collins kind of speaks to that a little bit, that, you know, there are many leaders who make their stamp on a place that are just not larger than life. They're humble. There's a humble leadership quality about them that I think is really important.
Mm. Great point.
To piggyback off of some of the things that Roy shared, one of the things that I truly look for, particularly now with teacher leaders and across the state, are those leaders who, two things, one, that they thrive in chaos and disruption. So I'm looking for those leaders who are really able to say, you know what, local restrictions are changing, executive orders are changing when it comes to our school and how we can keep individuals safe. But yet and still through that, they're finding innovative and creative ways to draw people's focus back to the main thing, which is teaching and learning, making sure students are connected. And so those leaders that are really able to take all of the variables and still help their stakeholders move from point A to point B are definitely some leadership qualities I look for. The second thing is I'm always looking for leaders who fail productively. And I always used to use the motto with my schools and even now in our department that the engineering motto is hurry up and fail. Let's find 10,000 ways that it doesn't work so that we can get even closer to a way that it does work. And so I'm looking for that productive failure. I'm looking for those individuals who can thrive in chaos and disruption, because that tells me that they're really going to be able to pivot and that they're still going to help keep their stakeholders, from our littlest stakeholders to our students, all the way to the adult stakeholders, on track with learning.
I love that term, productive failing, because, you know, we talk in school a lot about failing forward. But productive failing sounds interesting.
Truly.
Jen, what do you look for in your work with the Girl Scouts? What do you look for in the young girls as you're helping them turn into leaders?
So one of the main things I think we look for is definitely confidence, and to be well-spoken is a girl to come out and not be afraid to share something or be afraid to share her personal experience or anything like that. They're out there and they're ready to learn, especially when they love to learn. That's one of the best things. If they love gaining new information, learning new information, and actually observing it and taking it in.
Mm. And Roy, were you about to say something?
Yeah, Mary kind of struck a chord with me about some of the things she was saying, and particularly in thriving in chaos. I think that is such a key skill, particularly now. And, you know, with what we're going through, it's purely chaotic. And the individuals who have the ability to kind of sort through that and make sense of it in some way, or not be intimidated by it, but really embrace it, I think is really something that the leaders are about. And finally, the only other point I want to make is, you know, building relationships become really vital to the work that we do, because you're only as good as a leader as you are the followers that you have. So those relationships become extremely important in that process.
Mm. And Mary, I see you got a shout out here from Shane Johnson, who I happen to know is a former engineer. So I knew, I saw that he was, not a guest. He's watching the show. and when you started talking about the engineering process, I thought, oh, Shane has to pick up on that.
Awesome. Yes. And it makes so much sense, and to set that up for our students so that they do have that grit to pick themselves back up. That's a skill that's going to take them throughout the course of their life for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking, I've been up a while, so I have to keep drinking my coffee over here, but I had to get up early in the morning because I was speaking in the United Arab Emirates this morning, well, virtually, and I was presenting on the topic of academic resilience. And if you think about it, I was pointing out that schools are pretty much teacher dependent and they depend on the lesson, but that failed us during the pandemic. Lessons were nearly impossible to be live streaming and, kids were stressed, teachers were stressed. What we really need to do is create schools that are student dependent, where the core there is based on students' inquiry, their curiosity, and their drive. I pointed out that academic resilience means that you have the skills, and it reminded me of what you were talking about, Mary, that you have the skills to continue on and continue learning in spite of the obstacles that come your way. And I think that if we could prioritize the skills that make students academically resilient, then I think everything you need to learn is out on the internet. But if we could learn to be academically resilient in school, then we would know that nothing that comes across in life is going to really be able to take us down. And I think that's an important skill. And how do you think that academic resilience relates to leadership?
Well, the first thing, Nancy, I think is to elevate the fact that even when you talk about grit or perseverance or resilience, hope or faith in a future for our students, you don't measure those on a standardized test. So we have to recognize the gap before we can really talk about, the system that has been created to measure their academic content. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we talk about academic resilience, when we think about team building, as Roy said, relationship building, we have to remember that these are not soft skills. They are very much employable skills that are going to help students in whatever career or trajectory that they choose for their life. And so we need to walk those employable skills alongside our academic content, which means maybe sometimes instead of a written test, why can't we do a pitch competition? Or instead of a book report, why can't we kinesthetically allow them to act it out and write a new ending? So I think if we approach academic resilience from a new standpoint and a new juncture, then we're going to really be able to say, let's get you ready for the real world in a way that's going to give you real skills right now.
Right.
And I think the connection as we're thinking about academic resilience and leadership, it connects back to what we were talking about earlier, the ability as a leader to, in chaos, be able to, have a vision of going forward and how can we be flexible and, able to look at the situation and be able to move forward from that.
Yeah. And what between you, Christina and Roy, in Bronxville, because I know you both are working there, in Bronxville, how are you teaching students to be academically resilient?
So, in Bronxville, our whole pitch is about the four basic pillars of our Bronxville promise. And we have a lot of those underlying skills that were just mentioned by Mary embedded within the promise. And the promise is around leadership, innovation, critical thinking, and engaged citizenship. That's what we value. That's what we're trying to get every lesson geared towards. And those are the things we want that's our promise to our kids, that those four pillars will be valued and built around that. Most recently, we expanded the promise to include other skills, right? To include some of those softer skills that we're talking about the emotional side and the grit side and perseverance and those things. So when we look at the type of work we're engaging with students, We want it to be real, as Mary said, you know, walking that fine line or parallel line between the academic content, but also the real life skills, if you will. So when we do project-based learning or we implement some of the Learner Active classrooms, the units are based around real issues. Give you a couple of quick, very quick examples. You know, our high school students in particular are learning a lot in the engineering design thinking methodologies, things of that nature. We have a course where students have to find a problem in the community and build an app to solve it or help solve it. You know, those aren't things that show up on SAT scores or ACT scores and things like that. But we're trying to gear towards a lot of that outreach and how our students interact in the community. Engaged citizenship has become extremely vital to the work that we're doing now. So everything goes back down to those four pillars for us.
Fascinating. And Christina, do you have any stories, shout outs you want to give to teachers who are engaging in certain PBL? That's always dangerous. You can't give a shout out to a single teacher. Shout out to Bronxville teachers.
Woo! Truly.
You got some stories though.
Bronxville teachers are amazing. I was actually there today working with some of the teachers, and just what you're saying, the units that they're coming up with and how authentic they are and relevant. I was working with a teacher today, and she's working with her students on unconscious bias and really having them reflect on themselves, and they're creating a TED Talk that would go out to other people in the community. Another teacher was thinking about, she's a Latin teacher, but she was thinking about having the students study historically issues with water, surrounding water, and then current issues in the community again regarding water. So even thinking about water sourcing, equity of water, so access to water in different places, you know, here and in other places like in Flint or in Texas. So there's so much authentic work that's happening in Bronxville and the connection to, you know, being a global citizen that will make them future leaders and engaged citizens. So it's exciting work.
Yeah, that is getting the kids really ready. I mean, we should start building leaders at the youngest levels, right?
Yes.
I think we have an obligation to, Nance. It's not just about helping kids get into college, right? Or helping them get a job.
Right.
There's an obligation that we have as an educational organization to work with our kids to get them prepared for what they can contribute beyond schooling. And so a lot of the stuff that we're doing is trying to do that, fulfill that obligation with our kids. You know, we're working with a couple of other communities that are very diverse and very different than ours, getting kids together to work on some social justice issues that help build a better, larger community.
Mm. There was a quote, and maybe Carrie, who's our director behind stage. Well, actually, first I should say that, Mary, we got a shout out from Mark Lee. Mark Lee is a friend of mine who, well, I call him a friend of mine. Mark, I hope you think I'm your friend too. Mark actually runs a show here on IBM TV called, oh, come on, help me now. I can't remember. It's the dinner party, right? The online dinner party.
Okay.
And that was the show I was originally on that eventually led to me having a show. So he hosted this great show and he's in North Carolina. And Mark, I totally forgot that, but he's giving a shout out from Durham, North Carolina to some amazing teachers.
Awesome.
There was a quote that Tanya put up a little bit ago, not the last one, but the one before that. That's the one. I love this. The secret of life is to fail 7 times and get up 8. So Jen, how do the Girl Scouts prepare students with academic resilience and those skills to kind of just push through and don't quit?
So my biggest thing I would say that helped me with my academics would be Camp CEO. It was such a great opportunity as well. But we got to work with older women, not necessarily like in their 60s, but like women
Are you saying 60s is old?
No, definitely not.
Careful, Jen, like, careful.
Definitely there are some in their 20s, there are some in their 30s, but we got to ask women that went to school, like, what did you do in order to succeed in your area and your field? we got to ask them, like, what are some tips we can do? What is something we can learn from you that we can apply to our school?
So what was the greatest thing that you learned from the CEO that you shadowed about moving on in your life as a leader?
So my personal favorite, her name is Jessica Muroff, and she's a great woman. Love her. She's amazing. But she taught me more to just, when I do something, to have all the confidence in the world and just do it. Don't think twice about it. If you know you want to do it, just do it. And I think that really built more confidence in me, but it also gave me a lot of more leadership opportunities where I was able to go and I went into a judge and investiture ceremony. I got to lead one of those, the flag ceremony and everything for that. And like, I would have never done that if it weren't for someone to be like, do what you want to do, do what makes you happy and push yourself to do it.
I love that. I love that. What kind of advice would you give to young people as they start to move forward so that they understand that we're all leaders in every walk of life?
I will say, and this is definitely something that's close to my heart, is I got some of the best advice from one of my professors when I was finishing up my doctoral program. And he said, Mary, as you go into education, I want you to remember that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Ooh. And I truly believe, and when I talk about student stakeholdership and really making sure that our students have a voice at the table, is that if you are not invited to the table, if you don't see yourself in those decisions, if you don't hear your voice when people are talking about initiatives and policies and pedagogy that impact you, and you're not invited to that table, build your own. And I've seen middle schoolers start amazing groups and clubs at the middle school level. We started Genius Hour in our middle school because students couldn't see themselves in the curriculum. So they created an opportunity for students to have choice. High school students are starting to graduate with some of the leaders that I work with now, and they're developing their own trajectories when it comes to career pathways, and they're developing their own majors. So again, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And if you're not invited, just build your own table and create an opportunity for yourself.
That's wonderful. And that it reminds me, we had a guest last week, Lisa Limper, who is the first female football coach in Tennessee and perhaps the country. And one of the comments she made was that there was a committee that she ended up being on. And she said, and do you know how I got on that committee? And we were all like, and she's like, I asked. Right. It was something else she wanted to be on. She goes, and you know how I got there? I just busted into the middle of a meeting. And, you know, just like, so it is true. You just have to be willing to kind of put yourself out there, be out there.
Absolutely.
Now, a while ago, I wrote a book on executive function skills. And it's called Building Executive Function, The Missing Link to Student Achievement. And the idea is that there are about 40 executive function skills, and they range from being able to concentrate and focus to cause and effect relationships to planning, managing your time, self-regulating, and then all the way up to what we would consider some of the higher order skills of being able to create mental images, be able to analyze, predict, et cetera. So part of that, like I looked at executive function skills in terms of how do they support life skills? So for instance, there's a group of executive function skills that really support just conscious control. And then the next level up is engagement. And the next level up is collaboration. Well, the highest level is leadership. And all 40 of the executive function skills support leadership. And out of that, I developed the super skills of leadership. So I'd like you to take a look at the super skills of leadership and just take them all in. And I'm going to ask the question of when you look at these, do you think that there are any of these that are more important or should be prioritized over the others? Are there any of these that you feel like there are some you can learn, but there are others you just need to come with? What are your thoughts about the super skills of leadership? All right, we're going to take that down. And I'll tell
so Nancy,
bring that up again, director. So whenever, if anybody wants to see it again, we'll just ask for it.
Yeah, go ahead. The one that jumped out on me, not that it's perhaps more important, but courage was the one that really, really resonated with me and jumped out at me first. Because, you know, too often it's very easy to sit back and, to Mary's point earlier, you know, just kind of go with the flow. And if, even if you don't agree, you might not want to take that important first step to have your voice be heard. And I think people need to understand, and young people need to understand, that everybody's on their own personal journey, right? Everybody has a way, a path that they're developing, a journey that they're going. It's no less valuable than anybody else's. You don't have to do the same thing. You can go on your own, but there's a courage attached to that, that I think for me, that one really, really resonated, and it stood out amongst the other ones.
And do you think you can learn courage?
I do, with the right supports. You know, I don't think it's something that everybody has to, or is born with necessarily, but through support, through opportunity, through someone, you know, taking an interest in you and mentoring you and giving you that the freedom to have your voice be heard, you can develop that courage. Even if it takes the 7 times you fall down, but the 8th time you get up, you know, you'll get there.
And it reminds me of Lauren Franciscan made a comment. I love talking to children about worst case scenarios. Because once they name it, you can coach them through it to see it's usually not so bad. And that's a pretty cool way of helping to mentor courage in a person. What did you see when you looked at that, Mary? What stuck out for you?
I definitely am sitting here just agreeing with everything Roy just said about the courage piece. And I think to piggyback off of that and connect it back with leadership is that as leaders, we have to create psychologically safe places where people feel free to take those risks and to show up and be courageous. And I think right now, particularly in schools and organizations in the corporate world, we have to consider just the diversity that is the diversity in perspective and knowledge. Everybody, you know, experienced 2020 and is coming in with a new, fresh set of challenges, and some challenges that are some of them insurmountable that we've never faced before. If mm-hmm. we can create psychologically safe schools, psychologically safe teacher lounges and break rooms in our organizations, people will not fear backlash for speaking up and telling their truth. They won't fear telling their own story. They won't fear being able to just be who they truly are. And then we get the best out of them. And leaders have to start that conversation. We have to take that risk. We have to ask for those resources in order to be able to do that. So I definitely agree with Roy, and that courage is definitely something that can be taught, but it also has to be supported and nurtured.
So that's a good challenge to all those leaders out there who are trying to unlock leadership in others. Provide opportunities for people to be courageous. And it just reminded me when you were talking, Mary, that as a company, we're reading the book Courageous Conversations About Race, and we're engaging in courageous conversations, because this is the time to be able to say, you could sit there and say, well, you know, I'm not racially biased, but let's talk about it and let's put it on the table. And it's been fascinating so far.
That sounds great.
Jen, when you look at that picture, what popped out for you?
Definitely vision. One thing we stress to younger girls, especially me, is can you see yourself doing this? Can you vision yourself doing it? Do you want to do it? And if you do want to do it, how are you going to get to that point? And how are you going to get there? Is it going to be something that's really worth it? It's definitely something we stress with our younger girls.
So it's like envision your future self, have a vision for yourself, and then have the courage to get there.
Yes.
Love it. Love it. Christina, what popped out for you?
There were so many on there, but I think the one that kind of stood out to me was systems thinking. Because when I think of leadership, you know, it's not about the one person leading everything. It's about developing others. And so thinking big picture, being able to see how one person's actions impact all these other different pieces, I feel like it's so important to when you are a leader.
Yeah, love it. Well, thanks for all weighing in on that. I appreciate that. And now, hard to believe, we've already been talking for 35 minutes because it's time for What's in Your Mug? So the mug that I selected today, all right, I actually bought it. It says, let's get it up there. Leadership is unlocking people's potential to become better. And I'm drinking Starbucks. So Jen, I'm going to pass it off to you. What's in your mug?
I'm drinking Starbucks as well. I'm drinking a hot chai tea latte.
Is that your favorite?
Oh, yes, totally.
Christina, what's in your mug?
So I'm drinking water. If anyone who knows me, I'm always drinking water. I drink like gallons of it a day. And my mug is about leadership. And it kind of goes back to what Roy was saying earlier. Leadership's not a position or a title. It's an action. It's action and example.
Nice. I love that. Mary, what's in your mug?
Well, I have to share it's my favorite Peanuts mug. And just when, and it's always, when I think about leadership, I'm always like, is Charlie ever going to learn that she is always going to move the ball? So there's the hurdles that come up in life and leadership, but I'm drinking green tea.
Very nice. Very nice. Roy, what's in your mug?
So here we go. This is my mug of our new granddaughter. Spencer. I'll show you her beautiful little face. And then more importantly for me, because, it's about me always. Best of us since 4/30/20. So that's why this mug is really important. But actually, interesting enough, it represents a lot more than that because it represents the next generations and the importance of the work that we are doing in education. It reminds me every day about why we do the work that we do. It's really what we're leaving behind, what we're developing for people like my granddaughter. And that's what resonates with me mostly. And in terms of what's in my mug, let's see, how do I say this? As superintendent world, we know we have a lot of hidden spirits. So my spirits are going to remain hidden.
So it's scotch.
Had you guessed? You know me all too well.
Is it Oban?
It's not this time. Oh, it's a new one I'll have to share with you another time.
Oh, okay. I know we like to drink Oban together. We'd probably have some fun with Dave Allenback, who week after week joins us, and he's always drinking Johnny Black and seltzer. We've got some. Wait, did Erica say she's.
Oh, there you go.
She said she's sipping chai tea in her Miami Beach mug. And I thought she said sipping chai in Miami Beach. And I'm like, are you in Miami Beach? Because I'm over here. I'm in Naples. You can just visualize yourself coming on over. All right. Let's see. We got all the mugs? Everybody weighed in?
Oh.
Wonderful thing. Christina, why don't you kick us off for the second half of the show?
Sure. So as we're thinking about unlocking leadership, was there someone in your life that unlocked the leader in you? Like, did you always see yourself as a leader, or was there someone that really impacted you, and how did they do that?
Interesting question, Christine. I think you stumped the audience here. I guess if I were to think about it, which I really haven't spent a lot of time thinking about, I never thought that I would be this leader, this grand poobah or anything like that. Grand opa, there he goes, even better. But I think about my parents mostly when that question's raised. My dad was a superintendent, so I guess that helped a bit to get a role model and see how he went about his work. But I think of my mom often because, she grew up in a very challenging way. Her mom died right after childbirth, and she was born spina bifida, said she would never walk or have kids. She had 7 kids and didn't get her driver's license until she was 67 because she walked everywhere, that kind of thing. And I think about courage and vision and all those kind of things that we just talked about earlier about the importance of leadership. And I think my parents really modeled that for me and my siblings growing up. My dad was kind of a humble leader. He was different at home than he was at work, I'm sure. But, never got too full of himself about the work that he was doing, which was important work. So I think the modeling of that and the instilling of courage and vision and we can overcome things helped me in my path to become a leader.
And actually, your dad did a good job because he was a superintendent in Bergen County, New Jersey, right?
He was. Yes, he was.
He had some sons, and there was one time when, how many of you were all superintendents in Bergen County, New Jersey?
There were four of us, all superintendents in Bergen County together. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember talking to some other people in Bergen County, and they were like, it's just always Montesano, 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 Montesano.
Yeah, we like to say there's no other job we could get. That's why we all wound up there, but hopefully it's more than that.
Well, Dad did a good job.
He did, he did.
Anyone else want to share the answer to Christina's question? Who unlocked leadership in you?
I will say, you know, there's not just one person I can think of. I think all of the amazing individuals that I had the beauty of sharing time and space with sort of breadcrumbed the ideas and the inspiration that led to the leader that I'm continually evolving to become. But I will say, when I was in my School of Administration program at Western Carolina University here in North Carolina, I had an amazing professor, Dr. Frederick Buskey, and in his class, we talked about the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal. And I will say it was the first time that I got to think outside, when we didn't think outside the box, we got rid of the box. And it was the first time where literally he said, be innovative, be creative, think beyond the scope of anything you've ever imagined. And then we're going to literally take your time and resources this semester and pour into it. And I'm so grateful for that experience because I really do believe it set sort of the mold for how I continue to think and continue to bring leaders to the table to add their voices to. So that's just one experience. I probably could share hundreds, but I'm so grateful that he did say, you know, stop thinking outside the box, get rid of the box. And if you could get rid of the box, what would you create? What would you do?
That's a great one. Jen, you have a story you want to share? Someone who unlocked your leadership?
I had her. Well, now she's Judge Costello. She really helped me when I was wanting more deciding between being a lawyer or going into the med field. And I had someone come up to me and tell me, oh, you can never be a lawyer. You couldn't do it. You're not smart enough and you're not good enough. And she looked at me and she told me, she's like, you have every power in your hands right now to become what you want to be and to do what you want to do. And I think that really gave me enough confidence to go back and be like, well, now I'm going to be a lawyer and I'm going to show you what I can do.
Good for you. I love that. Now, Christina, do you want to answer your own question?
Yeah. I mean,
put everybody on the spot.
I know. I guess similarly to Mary, there are a couple of people that I can think of. I mean, first and foremost, like Roy, I do think of my parents. And I think, Jen, you were saying, I think part of it is someone giving you or telling you that they believe in you. And I feel like that is such a big part of it. And there are so many people across my life that have done that. So my parents being one of them. I remember a literacy coach when I was first coaching was another, just different peers as well. So I think that there's power in someone else telling you that you can do it. I feel like a lot of times people have self-doubt, like, you know, should I be here? Can I do this? And when I think about unlocking leadership, sometimes just telling someone and affirming to someone that they believe in you, you can do this, you have the skills, is so important. And yeah, there's a number of people in my life that have done that for me.
It's a wonderful thing. And it was interesting how you said it's not always somebody who's kind of, above you. Right. A lot of times it's a colleague. And I want to give a shout out to Team IDE because you make me a better leader. Like the team and my interactions with the team and the ways that you push my thinking, I think makes me a better leader every day. So thanks for that. Now, Mary, we were talking backstage. You've written a book, and I believe we have a picture to bring up on screen so that everybody can see it, called The 1 Minute Meeting, Creating Student Stakeholders in Schools. And when Roy heard that you could have a 1 minute meeting, he really wanted to hear more about it. So tell us the concept behind the 1 minute meeting and how you, it sounds like, bring out leadership in students.
Absolutely. So the 1 minute meeting was really my call to transform a school that was failing. Along my trajectory, I'd always been able to work in schools that serve low socioeconomic, historically marginalized populations. For the school that I talk about in the book, 2 days before I was named principal, this school actually had received an F on the school report card. So if you can imagine just the community and the conversation that was happening within this building, and a small community too, of just failure. And I knew that we didn't have 450 failures walking into our buildings and sitting in our classrooms. I knew our teachers were not failures, but I did know that we had to do something different. When you have a school in transformation and when you have a school that's in crisis, every minute counts. However, I'm going back to what I said, when, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. I wanted to ask our students, what has been their experience in our building? What do they think about when they think about teaching and learning? At the time, we had 422 students enrolled in our school. And so I sat down with our lead team, my vice principal, as well as our instructional lead. And I said, if we took 422 minutes and met with each child for 1 minute to ask them three strategic questions, we would glean so much information about what it is that we truly need to focus on to turn this ship around. That's what we did. Our first iteration of the 1 minute meeting, we met with every child, kindergarten through fifth grade, for 1 minute. We asked them three questions. How are you today? What are your greatest celebrations and challenges from the past quarter or semester? And what are your greatest challenges from the past quarter or semester? Even our kindergarten students were able to shed light on
the challenges things. Twice, right?
Or challenge. And what are your biggest celebrations from the last quarter? Yes.
Unless I heard that wrong. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. No, thank you. We were able to, even from our kindergarten students, glean so much information and feedback about things that we as adults felt good about. We were ticking off the boxes for programs and pedagogy and policies. But when we asked our students what they were experiencing, they shed light on their values. They shed light on different things that were happening in the classroom with interaction, student to student, teacher to student. We actually took that first iteration of responses and we turned those into our school improvement goals. Mm-hmm. Our students truly had a voice at the table. We ended up doing the 1 minute meeting once every quarter. And again, when I say the 1 minute meeting, every school principal has 400 minutes. It's just how we use those minutes in order to really make change happen in our buildings. At the end of that first year, we were able to, and again, it was a team effort. We went from an F to a D with 86% growth. And the last year, we went from a D to a B with 88% growth. But we did that because our community, our parents, our teachers really said, we want to take what the students have showed us and what they've telling us and really put that at the center of what we do versus vice versa, and really making adults feel good about the teaching and learning process.
Yeah, I love that. The 1 minute meeting. Okay, Roy, how can you use that? Let's
see. Wow. If I can convince my administrators I only want to meet with them for 1 minute, that'd be really terrific. No, I love that idea. You know, it just resonated so much, and how we can glean information, especially from the kids, right? And that's really where we want to get it from. Where are they experiencing? Where are they feeling? What's been great? What's not so great? They'll tell you, right? If you ask a question, they are going to tell you, and you have to be prepared for the answers as well, I guess, is the other side of that. You know, it reminds me, it's not the same thing, but it reminds me way back when I was a principal, I had asked my faculty at a faculty meeting, every teacher to write down, you know, what kind of classroom do you want to have? Like if you had a kid in school, if you had a child, a grandchild, cousin, whatever, you know, what would you want them to experience in school? And they wrote down things and whatever. And I said, okay, make your classroom that classroom, right? Make yourself that teacher that you want for your own grandchild, right? It's the same kind of thing. You're trying to get that information about what's most important. And are we missing the mark, or what do we value here, right? Mm-hmm. What are we valuing for us? What are we valuing for our kids? What is most important? And then finally, how do we get there? And it's a joint effort, it's a team effort. Everybody can buy into something that's tangible like that. So I love the idea that I'm fascinated that you would take the 422 kids and meet with them for 1 minute. I'd love to know how kindergartner kids responded. That really must have been fascinating meetings.
It truly was. And I do talk about this in the book, because kindergartners, they, even though they're developing their emotional language, it gives you an opportunity to help them do that, which is a skill that they'll need for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Great. I love it.
So definitely everybody buy the book. I did. And then Mary, you also sent me a copy, but it's a fascinating book and would actually give you a lot of good ideas for having, I mean, I look at it from the standpoint of what you were just saying is, targeted questions that, you know, it's not going to be a 5-minute answer. You know, it's going to be short, but you're going to glean so much information from it. So Jen, how can you use that with the Girl Scouts? You thought about perhaps 1-minute meetings with the Girl Scouts.
So my gold award was kind of along the lines of that was, but I got girls to read and I got girls to write about what they wanted to be when they grow up, and got them to read about women that impacted history in some kind of way. And so I got to really talk to them, and I got to be like, hey, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And like, how do you think you're going to get to there? And like, what steps do you want to take to get there? And that was very interesting.
It looks like you really have done a lot of work with the girls on visioning, like
yes,
create a mental image of yourself in a different position. Mm-hmm. I love that. So we only have a few minutes left. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about in terms of unlocking leadership in others?
You know, one of the things that came to me as everybody was talking about different things was, you know, giving other people permission. You know, it's almost like when we're in positions of leadership and talking with other people and helping to mentor them or coach them, whatever, it's almost like you have to give them permission to jump out of their box, if you will, get rid of their box and to not have to, you know, be that whatever that somebody else wants them to be, but give them permission to do what they need to do to become that leader. I think that's our responsibility.
You know, I had read when I started my doctoral work in leadership, we'd read a book. I want to say it's Max Dupree. I think you went to the same school, right? Before, we both went to Fordham.
Yes, so yes, yes.
Probably read the same list as I did. Yeah. It was Max Dupree, The Art of Leadership. Yeah. And he talked in there about your giants. In other words, I forget what the term was, but it was something about like invest in your giants or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember that, and I promised earlier when I introduced you, Roy, that there was a story to go along with Westwood. So I remember so clearly we were consulting in Westwood. We were designing learner active classrooms. In you would actually asked us, you wanted to create a single school. I guess you had K-6, did you have the local?
Yeah, there were 4 K-4s, K-6s, I mean, and a 7-12 high school.
And so you wanted to create like a 5-6 school, I think it was, right?
Yeah, correct. K-4s and 1-5-6 school, that's correct.
And we needed, you know, something to make it interesting. So we created a 5-6 school of learner active technology infused classrooms. Students would be engaged in problem-based learning, et cetera. Based on my framework, students schedule their own time and take responsibility for their own learning. And so it's a very active learning environment. And I always say that it takes until your fourth year of being a learner active technology infused classroom teacher until you really get it, like that, you know, all of a sudden the ideas start popping. So in the beginning, you do everything your consultant tells you to. And then eventually, well, we hope, right, Christina? And then eventually you start seeing all the connections. And so there were these three teachers that were all teaching fifth grade. And the way your fifth grade worked was that every teacher had a homeroom and taught ELA to their home. Mm-hmm. And then they split off so the kids would go to one of them for math, one for science, one for social studies. And so they spoke to the consultant that was working with them and said, you know, two of us have an accordion door, and we open that accordion door and we actually let the kids work together as one big classroom with two teachers. And the other teacher is on the other side of a cinder block wall. So if we could just take down that wall, we would be able to run this big classroom. So the consultant said, why don't you write that in a proposal and I'm going to bring it to Dr. Sula. So she brought it to me and I was like, well, this is very interesting. I said, I'm going to bring it to Dr. Montesano. So that's you and I met. And I remember, because I didn't know you that well at the time, we were just starting to work together. Mm-hmm. And you said, you read the proposal and you said, well, let's get the building and grounds people, because let's go see if it's a weight-bearing wall. And so we all go tromping down to the school, and they said it was not a weight-bearing wall. And you said, well, then cut a big arch in it and open up the wall. Those teachers were so mm-hmm. amazed that someone would let them run with an idea that required cutting a hole in a building. And I will say that I joined them and helped them over the summer. They spent the entire summer designing the most fun learner active class.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
60 some kids, three teachers, and then the co-teacher who used to go to all the different classrooms was like, well, I'm just in this room all day because now all of my students are here. And the students took such responsibility for their own learning. It was mm-hmm. it was a really fabulous learning environment. And I always tell the story because I have the greatest respect for you, Roy, that your response
was simply,
you know, well, let's do it. Because if your giants are coming forth with a great idea, why not do it?
Makes us all look good when it happens.
It does. It does. All right. So what I'm going to do is just do a go around. Last question. Aspiring leaders, as you think about, if you were to give advice to a leader, an aspiring leader, for them to better unlock their own potential, how can we all unlock our own potential even better? What advice could we give to people for unlocking their own potential? And you see, I just came up with that, so none of you have thought about this. So you're all sitting there going like, and I think I would say to be reflective. One of the things we use with students and teachers is something we call an efficacy notebook, that after they engage in an activity, they answer some questions that are, well, how will this learning help you solve a problem you're trying to solve? How does this learning connect to other learning? What else do you want to know? I think that if you want to be a better leader, keep your own efficacy notebook and constantly, after you have any encounter, whether you're running a meeting or whether you're in a meeting or whether you're, you know, just roaming around a hallway, to write down in that journal a little something about what happened, but then ask yourself some questions such as, how did that make me feel? What might I have done differently? How could I have employed, did I employ any of those super skills of leadership? So that's my advice. Keep your own efficacy notebook. All right, Roy, what's your advice?
So because we haven't had to think about it, thank you for that. I guess I'm reminded of a Jim Valvano quote. He says, you know, don't give up. Don't ever give up. And I think, you know, we've talked about courage before, and, you know, when you get down on something that you don't think you could do, or something didn't work right, or, you know, whatever, just keep at it. Keep at it. Keep going at it. If you believe in it, you got to do it, right? And so you might learn from those mistakes. You got to take that back to your point about reflectiveness. You know, take it back, listen to what people are saying, go back at it again and go back at it again, but just don't ever give up.
Wasn't it Churchill who said, when you're going through hell, keep going?
That's right. That's right. That. If you're halfway there, you might as well go.
Yeah, right. Jen, what advice would you give to aspiring leaders, the girls that you're working with, for them to unlock their own leadership skills?
To follow the GIRL. Be that go-getter, be that innovator, be that risk taker, and be the leader that people need you to be, or you don't think you're going to be, but you're going to be.
Nice wrap up, Jen. We still didn't figure out what B-O-Y stands for.
No, we haven't.
I want to go back to that. Christina, what advice would you give?
I guess it would be the next step to the reflection. So after you have reflected, I would say always seek out learning opportunities. So whether that is another mentor, someone to talk to, you know, a reading, a book, an article, a course, just constantly seeking to learn.
Love it. All right. And Mary, you've done a lot of leadership coaching and beyond limits.
Yes. Yes. So my advice would be to really understand that life gives you all the answers that you need. When you think about your life and you think about all the obstacles, all the challenges, and you still went back to that thing that tried to frustrate you or brought you the most down or tried to break you, that's exactly where the world needs you. That's where your purpose is. That's where your gift is. So look back at your life. It'll give you all the answers that you need, and keep going. Never, ever give up. on that thing that you're passionate about.
Awesome. It's perfect. And before we end the show, I'd like to ask Carrie backstage, who's carrying all of the comments. I want you to go back and look, Carrie, that when we were talking about who were the people who mentored us, that there were several people who gave shout outs to teachers in their lives, to people in their lives. So let's do a couple of shout outs to Ms. Toniati, who helped Sabrina find her strengths and lead others to believe in themselves too. Nice one. Shout out to Amber, I can't pronounce that, El Tayeb, I would say. And let's see, Breaking Glass to help women, love it, love it. Shout out. I know Bill Calvani. I used to consult for Bill at Sparta Junior High School. And he is crazy. But I remember when the district had some sort of a buyout, I guess, and he lost a third of his faculty. And he's like, Nance, how am I going to find the time to hire, like to interview enough teachers to fill this faculty? I said, Bill, why don't you just create a rubric and let your teachers do the interviewing? And that's what he did. So I love that. Listen, we unfortunately have run out of time, and I hate that because I could go on with you guys for another hour. I would like to thank each and every one of you, Mary, Roy, Jen, and Christina, my co-host, for being here tonight and talking about unlocking leadership. I think we left a lot of good nuggets out there for people. So thank you so much. I will see you backstage in a little bit. And for my audience, thank you as always for being here. And for those of you who like to keep that conversation going, love that. And please know that you can, if you miss the show live at any point, you can always go to nancysula.com and you will find past links as well as upcoming show links. Next week, we're going to be talking about space. And so that ought to be good. We've got some really interesting people coming in with NASA. So, you know, you definitely want to be here to learn more about how we learn in space and from space. So a big shout out to our directors with IDE Corp behind the scenes here, making it all happen, moving people around, putting up comments to Boyd and Carrie. Totally appreciate and love you guys. And from IBM TV, Wen Fan, who is the, you know, super director who is always here to help us out. And thank you again to IBM TV for hosting this show. So as always, let's see what the kids from IDE have put together for us this week. See you next week. Bye.
My favorite memory from school was in third grade, and we watched basketball instead of doing work.
Did you know Katherine Johnson was the first woman and Black woman to meet in the NASA computing group? She helped Friendship 7 orbit around the Earth, and she helped on the mission to the moon.
I love truck, I love them. I love tow truck, I love camper, I love rocket truck, I love tow truck, and I like mom truck, I like tractor. I love them all.
When I grow up, I want to be a dancer because I like going on stage a lot, even though I haven't been there in a long, long time.
Thanks for watching Learning Unwrapped. Tune in next week to talk about learning from space, learning in space. Sky's the limit.